is a production of Cornell University.
All right, everybody, we're going to go ahead and get started. I feel like everybody's so far away today. There's plenty of seats up here for the future. I don't have any today. Want to see if there's any late additions to the agenda? Other than an update on the clothing drive during the report from the chair.
Can I just quickly talk about the email?
Yes. We can do that during report from the chair as well. Care fund. Anything else? Is this? Temporary employees.
Huh.
Can I put that in new business?
I think so.
Sure.
Temporary employees as part of the internal applicant process?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a fun one. Any other late additions to the agenda? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and everyone received a copy of the minutes. Sorry for the late notice of the agenda and the minutes. BJ had to step away for a family matter, so I had to figure out where he kept everything and go through there and pull it all together last minute, so my apologies for that. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I motion to approve the minutes.
Is there a second? Several seconds. Is all those in favor? Any opposed? All right, seeing no opposed, it passes unanimously. Thank you. quick president's address update next on the agenda. Linda just wanted to check in with food and those aspects, make sure everything's good there.
Yes, I haven't heard back confirmation from the dining folks. I did meet with them, and they sent me an email and said, here's kind of what we've discussed, and then I sent them back and they said, fine, I'll be good, and they didn't hear back from them, so I sent them another reminder saying, it's only coming this way, I just want to make sure that, yes, we're okay.
Okay.
Here's the account number, so I'm hoping, although I know that here in Maine, which is out until next week.
Okay.
So, and then I ordered the apples as well.
Great.
Do I need an account number or anything like that when I pick them up?
I gave her an account number, but it might not be the actual recorded.
Oh, that's okay.
BJ and I had an opportunity to meet with Bill to go over the Bailey Hall logistics, shared with him the briefing that we sent to the president's office, are continuing to add some detail to the timeline so that from an audiovisual standpoint, there's cues and things in place. So you should have that next, probably early next week at the latest. What we've talked about, and BJ is working on this, is pulling together photos of staff with the president to have sort of this slideshow and music to sort of help keep the energy up in the room rather than just sort of coming into an empty Bailey with house music, trying to make it a little bit more lively and share a lot of images over President Scorton's time at Cornell interacting with employees. So BJ is pulling that together. And then it's pretty straightforward. We'll do the award at the end. Amy was kind enough to prompt us on some text for the presentation of the award. So that's all pretty much coming together. Bill, I don't know if you have anything to...
I just wanted to make sure that you let the folks know that the issue of the late start was trying to get the press orders.
One question about if the apples are picked up at 8:30 and need to go directly to Bailey.
Also,
do we go to the shop and there'll be a place that you can store them?
Yes. If you're saying from the building, is that on the regular lot?
Right.
Okay.
Northeast
corner. We'll send out a more detailed email probably early next week with sort of more detailed logistics and timing. We will ask for some volunteers, some to help with the food setup and disbursement, some to help with seating, so that you all can help there. We asked that Bailey block off sections of seating, because I know in past years we've had people sort of all over the place and trying to concentrate it down towards the center of Bailey and then working on the middle ring and sort of keeping everybody nice and tight and condensed. Also new this year, we're going to live stream the address. We're not going to over communicate that in advance because we still would like to keep attendance at the actual event high, but sort of last minute the day before let folks know that there is a live streaming opportunity, which then will also be recorded as well. So then we have all that information. Eric and his team have put together a nice plan for the communications. So that's been in place. And Gary on social media has done several things. If you haven't seen the event on the Facebook page and you have colleagues that you are friends with on Facebook, you make sure to share that event and help get the word out that way, so that we can have a broader a reach as possible. Any questions on the President's Address update? No? All right. The other thing is the Fall Employee Celebration, which is November the 1st from 2:30 till 5. Wanted to see or get the group's thoughts on what we would like to do with that, if we would like to do what we've done in years past. So just sort of wanted to throw that out there for a minute for some open discussion. They asked if we'd like to have a table during the event or volunteer, so I wanted to reach out to all of you to see what your thoughts are. Ready, go.
So we could have a table with the banners, like we had the last employee benefits area. That would be really nice.
Okay.
And as the chair of the education committee, I plan on being there anyway and having some paper copies of how you sign up to take credits and stuff like that available for employees or something like that.
Great. Any other ideas on that for that event?
Do we have any leftover notepads or notepads, whatever they're called? Can we get some of those out?
Yeah, so we can hand out the desk cubes again.
Mm-hmm.
I'll work on getting a Google Doc set up so folks can volunteer and sign up. It would be really helpful. I know it's not a typical work day, and it's designed to be fun, but if we can sign up for shifts and try to make that work, I think that would be great for us to have a presence and start to engage in a good way.
You can bring bowls of your safe leftover Halloween candy you don't like because the kids run around.
Well, that's a good idea.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could take it to Curtis.
Wow.
Curtis, whatever we don't have left on November 1st, we'll bring
yeah.
bring to your office. All right, any questions there? All right, I'll turn it over to Bridget. You all have a sheet in your handouts, which is a clothing giveaway. There's two emails or notes, one from Bridget and then one from Gary. So this is for your reference. You can share this with your staff or colleagues in your departments or areas. So, Bruce?
We had talked about the clothing giveaway on the previous meeting. We had talked about having a table or handing out literature or things like that available. If anybody is interested in sitting at a table or being there, let me know and I can pass that along to Amy. Unfortunately, I cannot because it's a Tuesday and we have our department seminar that's kind of started. So, I cannot be there. So if anybody's interested, or if we just want to have literature, I don't know if we've got a brochure or something that we want to have down there, just sitting out on the table if nobody's available, just for her to be there, then we could do that also.
What are the times of that?
11
to 3. And the actual location is?
700
Clark. Okay. So, and that's on the 21st of October?
Yes.
So I guess what we'll do is we'll put a Google Doc of volunteer opportunities together with the Employee Celebration Day or the Fall Employee Celebration Day and then the clothing giveaway. And if folks can slot themselves in for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever they are able to give, that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Any other questions on that? The other thing that I thought was neat is Gary at Transportation, who's really excited about working with the EA and being a part of things, has a neat service where he'll pick items up from you to sort of eliminate the hassle of dropping it off. So I thought that was neat to, you know, share with your offices and try to coordinate, you know, people in your building and having Gary come pick it up. Or if you can drop it off, great. But I thought that was a really great effort that he made on his part. Then Linda, about the CARE Fund fundraising, now that you've taken a bite.
Right.
Oh, sorry, Gina. Great suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay. Linda?
So we care on two things, a short-term and a longer-term thing. As you probably all know, because Beth has been here before, Beth McKinney is the one who's really kind of taken the lead and chaired the Employee Care Fund. And they, one of their fundraisers is usually at the Red and White Hockey Game, which is Saturday night. And she and Ruth from her team have been going every single year to do the fundraising at that, to have the table and collect donations, and they really want a year off. I myself would do it, except that like a week ago I planned the whole family night already on Saturday. So I wanted to see if there was anyone. They're looking for people. The game starts at 7:30. They would want someone there from 6:30 to 7:45 at the rink. And they really need two people because they want to put one on each side. So if there's anyone who maybe owns the game anyway, was like coming a little early and, you know, not being the first 15 minutes of the game to get and collect donations for the Employee Care Fund, they would greatly appreciate it. So put it out there. And the second thing is, I know last year that I had said, I've been sitting on the Care Fund for 5 years now, and at this point we're trying to find another representative. We have Jim Wallerstein is representing Geneva, but we do not have someone from the EA for Ithaca. I've been pinch hitting, but I really can't continue to pinch hit to see if there's someone willing to sit on that committee. Basically, it's that you'll get emailed a copy of an application, and then usually the team goes back and forth via email on whether they have any more questions or what they feel in terms of whether it should be funded or not. And then that's basically it, because that's usually the one who communicates with the employee. So just somebody who can, you know, look at the criteria and look at what the circumstances of the individual and whether or not they're proven. So not a lot of demand. It's just reading an email and then putting probably a couple times a month. We do definitely have some votes. You'd be willing to do it?
Yes.
That's awesome. So I'll let Beth know that. And we'll do a little transition and we can kind of get used to the process.
I did it before.
Oh,
when
okay.
I was at EA before I did it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Well, that's progress. Thank you, Hazel.
The time for the table was 6:30 to
7:45.
I'll do that too.
No, no way.
Do you need two people? Did you need
two people? Yeah, she needed two people.
Let me check.
Okay.
Great.
So I'll head back to our table.
Yes.
Okay.
Gina?
On the care fund, wasn't there, I was trying to remember exactly what the initiative was, but something tied to the centennial that was going to result in funding for the care fund.
Okay, so I only heard it kind of second hand, but what they decided for the centennial is that they're going to charge a small fee per day for people to register for the programs, but the money is going to all go towards kind of charitable efforts on campus. And I had heard rumor that one of the charitable causes they were looking at is potentially the fair fund, but I don't have that definite.
Do you know who would be the person who would get that confirmation?
Yeah, it's not confirmed yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it's...
Okay, so yeah, I was going to say, I heard it in an unofficial way, really.
It's an unofficial way to go about it.
Right, okay.
But more to come on that, I'm guessing, come the November 19th meeting.
Okay.
So, but spoiler alert.
It was definitely one of the leaders.
Yeah.
They're considering multiple, I guess.
Multiple, yeah. They're just trying to... Yeah, trying to figure out, I guess, the allocation or whatever it might be. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, well, we have some guests with us today. Welcome. Topic today is around sustainability and how we can do our part as the EA to help message, influence change, support different programs and initiatives. So we invited... Dan Roth, and Dan brought Aaron and Chris along with him. So we've got about 30 minutes and wanted to just have a discussion of sorts, and I'll turn it over to Dan and the rest of the folks at the table to make their own introductions and get started.
Great. Well, thanks for having us. Thanks for taking the time to think through these important issues. So I'm the director of the Campus Sustainability Office, and Aaron and Chris are both very involved in I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've been up to in the last 6 months since the fact that we've been ending the EA and the UA all passed resolutions around accelerating our carbon neutrality commitment. And you'll hear in that context a bit about the acceleration working group that Chris was one member of. Chris and I and several other staff were on that committee, and a little over half of that group was faculty from around the university that were brought on board by Joe Burns from the Faculty Senate. And so I'll share with you a bit of what the recommendations were from that committee and some of the priority areas, and also talk a bit about Think Big with Green, which is an engagement campaign that Aaron's been managing and is very focused on staff engagement and getting staff involved from across the university in different ways. So I think hopefully I'm only going to take about 10 minutes to go through a few slides. I'll do my quickest version possible to give us plenty of time to talk and for Aaron and Chris to add some more details. I'm sure I'll miss a few things if they can have. So that's our goal, is to really present you some updates and to have a conversation about engaging staff and the important issues. Great idea to do that. Okay. Fortunately, I have to stand behind you and advance the slide. So, really quickly, I wanted to say that what I'm about mostly going to focus on is a carbon neutrality commitment. But it's important for me to give you a quick update on the recognition that Cornell is getting broadly across all areas of sustainability. There's three different indicators that you pay attention to nationally on how we're doing relative to other universities. And that is STARS, which is a very comprehensive data set. Anybody really wants to geek out on sustainability and see how we're doing relative to Columbia and Stanford and, you know, various schools around the country. STARS is the most comprehensive data set, and they're tracking, and we report to STARS every year, everything from how many classes are being taught about sustainability, how many faculty are doing research on sustainability, you know, how green are our buildings, how many square feet of buildings there are. There's a lot of metrics in that. There's also a whole set of metrics on staff. Are we engaging? Do we have programs for staff to learn from each other about sustainability? Do we have a living fair wage for our staff? Do we have wellness programs for our staff? So it looks at sustainability From the human perspective, the human dimension of sustainability, from the staff engagement side, from the facility side, from the academic side. So if you ever want to learn more about that, definitely go to STARS. And we've achieved the STARS Gold ranking, which is the second highest. No schools have achieved Platinum yet. And we've had that now since 2011. We report to that system every year. Now, Sierra Club and Princeton Review, which I think the average person in America has probably heard more about than STARS, use that data set to then communicate more broadly to, in Princeton Review case, high school seniors that are looking at where to go to school, and Sierra Club goes to a very broad environmental community, including a lot of people who are here at Cornell or involved in Cornell. And we're doing very well in those areas because of a lot of the effort that has happened on the facilities and the academic side. The students have been pushing us, and staff have been a really key part of all of this for many years now. So we're doing exceptionally well. So what we're talking about when we're talking about accelerating our carbon neutrality commitment, we're doing is basically building on our leadership position and really maintaining that leadership position nationally in terms of how aggressive we are. So I just don't want people to think like we've got to, like, we're going from 0 to 60 here or something like that. But we're already really a well-established leader in this area. And one of the areas that we've done really well is in our carbon reduction work. And this is just a quick graph to show you. In 2008, around the time we did our first comprehensive greenhouse gas report on all greenhouse gas emissions, including transportation related to Cornell operations, we've seen about a 32% reduction. That's primarily from our switch from coal to natural gas and to going from buying a lot of electricity to producing a lot of our own electricity, making waste heat into electricity at our new power plant. This also is because of our investments in energy conservation that we've done and our construction of new, more high-performing buildings. So the buildings we're building now are roughly 30% more energy efficient than the buildings we were building a few years before, and are about 30% more energy efficient than kind of our national code says that buildings should be built at. We want to go even higher than that, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But this is where our carbon emissions are coming from. We've gotten a lot of recognition for the reductions we've made to date. And our climate action plan, which we began putting these out in 2008, we update every 2 years. This is the newest update. I encourage you to go online to our website, climateaction.cornell.edu, and you can get all the information that's in this booklet. But what we do every 2 years is we review how we're doing, look at where there's strengths and opportunities for change and new initiatives, and outline some of the challenges. Like there's 62 actions that are outlined or goals in the climate action. And the climate action plan became the basis of looking at how do we accelerate our achievement of carbon neutrality. And how do we kind of whittle that down to what are really some of the key things that the acceleration working group looked at over the last few months. Now, some of the areas that are in the climate action plan that I think particularly of interest to your group, the staff's skills for success have been updated. This is something that Chris's group has been very involved in, and Linda and others in HR, to integrate sustainability into the expectations for all of our staff. There's a lot of work that led to this, and there's going to be a lot of work ahead of us how we actually now implement this so that all staff at Cornell really feel like they know what to do when they're told this is an expectation, and their managers and supervisors begin to use the stewardship skills that are described there in their performance groups, which there's now some guidance from HR on what that would actually look like in people's daily work. We've also, within the last few years, rolled out a really impressive program that Aaron's very involved in. Within the Think Big Do Green campaign are two programs that really are going to, where staff kind of have the most influence, and that is in kind of the day-to-day operations of a lot of our offices and labs, particularly grad students in the lab. So we've been talking to GPSA about that. And we piloted this in the College of Engineering last spring, and we've now just rolled this out university-wide this September. So So we've got 39 offices certified and 6 labs. And this is a self-audit. Any office on campus can do this to help them get a better sense of their patients. And there's continued growth because, you know, we know there's hundreds of offices and labs on campus. So there's a lot more to do there. And when you get certified, you have certificates, and there's a way that you can recertify every few years to make sure that you're on top of the current practices in your office. The Energy Conservation Initiative continues through the next year or so, but we have a lot more to do over the next coming years of thinking about how we invest in our facility and infrastructure standards. So going into this question of how do we accelerate our carbon neutrality commitment, this committee really was looking at all the things I just described as kind of a starting point. We're in a leadership position. We're doing a lot of great things. We have a lot of different tools and mechanisms and approaches that we're trying. So how do we accelerate that in a way that enhances our university mission? And, the first question they had to ask is can we do it? And they clearly came out saying that it's feasible and it's imperative that we do it. It's imperative for all of the environmental and social justice reasons that action on climate change is required globally. But that we also need to do it because as a university we have a responsibility and we have strength in this area that we can build on. So if we can, you know, model this type of activity here in a small city and get our community engaged, we're going to help move that whole effort forward in the state and nationally and internationally. So we really have an obligation and the ability to do this in a way that enhances that mission. So how did we do that? They looked at 6 specific milestones. There's 16 recommendations broadly in the report that came from the acceleration working group, but there's 6 milestones they felt like were really critical to begin moving on in the next 6 months to a year. So this is where I think our conversation for the next remaining time should really focus on. This is their first milestone is really that we need to engage the whole campus in a really thoughtful way. And so what this doesn't say behind this in the details of the report are we need to be thinking about institutional planning frameworks like toward new destinations before carbon reduction initiatives. We need to be thinking about how to make carbon neutrality and engagement in these activities a mandate for all of the colleges and the unit. We need to look at curriculum across the university. We have a climate change minor, but we haven't really thoroughly integrated climate change and other sustainability topics into kind of the core expectations of students on campus. And there's a lot more faculty research that could be incentivized in this area if this is seen as really a university-wide imperative. The money associated with this is really to kind of build on the things that we've already started and to create a position within human resources that would be able to coordinate a lot of the staff engagement activities and training required and partnering with wellness, for example, and diversity and inclusive initiatives so that people don't think of sustainability and climate action as something that's just about doing good in the world. They really see that there's a lot of synergy between how we take care of ourselves, how we take care of each other in terms of our culture on our campus, and what impact we have on the environment. So I think this milestone one is really one of the most important for this group to act with, but I'm going to share with you the other few to get a little bit more into the facilities and the academic side, which is to work with the board and trustees and our facilities groups to actually ratchet up our performance standards for new construction and renovation, allow us to actually have longer paybacks. Currently, all of the energy conservation work that gets done on campus has to be have a payback. That is, all the investment is payback within 7 years. To actually do more lighting retrofits, to do more heat recovery in the building, a lot of heat is literally pouring out of buildings that we don't have heat recovery systems in the buildings. We need to extend that payback period to closer to 15 years, which means we're still going to get a return on our investment. It's just going to take 15 years as opposed to 7. And that changes how many energy conservation projects we can do. To do that, we need to get real high-level policy changes done, which, you know, could involve some of you in this room if that's an excitement of yours, but it's not really broad staff engagement. This is an area that actually would maybe have some more engagement with staff more broadly, which is actually attaching cost of carbon where we're making decisions on campus to use carbon. So we use carbon when we heat up our buildings, so we turn on lights, and we use things when we power up our labs, power up our buildings, and we use carbon when we travel. So this is business-related travel. And we think that if we attach the cost of carbon to some of those decision points, we would actually start to make some different decisions institutionally. Large corporations are being to do that, in part because they know that there's carbon costs that are going to come from federal government down the line, and they're just trying to kind of pivot so they're prepared for that. We could do this for real behavior change goals on campus, and it also begin to kind of disincentivize, and the way we disincentivize through the parking fee structure. We pay for parking in part because we want to incentivize public transit. We need money to help incentivize those kind of sustainable options in one way or another. We need to continue to sign power purchase agreements. Has anybody seen the solar farm by the airport yet? One person. Great. Well, everybody, if you haven't already heard, on Monday, this coming Monday, is our solar bration. We're inviting anybody in this committee that wants to come out to the solar farm. We're going to have buses going out, out there. We're going to have speakers at the solar farm. So I'll make sure to pass on that invite to your group and everybody in your group that's coming out there. But we need to be doing more of those types of power purchase agreements to move forward. We need to actually look at a very complex proposal that's been on the table since 2007, which is to do a deep geothermal heating project through the power campus for our heating needs. This is going to take at least $3 million in the short term to do technical feasibility studies. This is getting worked out between facility services and central administration. Looks like we're gaining some traction for this. It's much more of a technical, kind of in-depth look at this issue to make sure that we can move forward with this in our climate action plan going forward. And the last milestone we looked at was basically, you know, if we're going to embrace this as an institution, just like we do for all of our other efforts, you know, we just probably heard about Engaged Cornell and the kind of philanthropy that's going to be involved in that type of transformation around community-based education research, that we need a similar type of commitment both from the central administration, but also in terms of how we engage our alumni and our funders. And one of the kind of key appointments there would be to create a director of strategic partnerships for climate action that could work with alumni, donors, agencies to see where there's mutual interest in this sector. So that's kind of the core of what the Acceleration Working Group recommended. And there's a lot of next steps. The university has not formally adopted the new target. These milestones were presented as key ways which the university could clarify its commitment and strategically invest in this area so that when we do decide to move or to make this decision to move it forward, we can do it really confidently that we're moving forward in all of the right areas. So that's still ahead of us. Trustees are actually going to have their first major presentation on sustainability, and it's going to be a major topic next week. It's already this week, sorry. I'm prepping for this, and it feels like it's still far away. So I'm sorry. There's been a proposal that the EA might want to wrestle with in terms of should we be having some campus forums, you know, maybe targeted towards different communities, sub-communities, and should we have a staff forum on climate action, or what staff should say. The Green Office and Green Labs program is just really getting rolled out, and there could be a lot more kind of engagement, not just the work that we're doing from facility services, you know, versus managing it, but really how does it get embraced campus-wide. There's a lot of people that have given us the feedback that the deans and the colleges and administrations themselves need to be firmly committed to this. And you know, we know that there's students and faculty that really want to push their colleges toward that end. So that's an important next step. And if any of you are interested, on November 18th, the President of the Sustainable Campus Committee hosts an annual summit. If any of you are interested in getting more engaged in campus sustainability, be happy to make sure that you are invited to that. And at that event, we're going to be kicking off working groups made up of many of the people on campus who are already involved in advancing some of these initiatives. So regardless of budget constraints or all the other constraints that we have on our time and resources, we're going to be, there are a lot of people on campus that want to move the initiative forward. So we'll be kicking off some working groups around these topics. I'm sure I went over 10 minutes, but that's what we want to kind of give you some of the groundwork to have a conversation about this.
Great. Thanks. So I guess we'll open it up for questions and comments. And, you know, really the goal of this is what are things that the EA can get behind? What are things that we can do or ways that we can support? So just sort of want to throw it out there for sort of a roundtable discussion of sorts for the next 10 minutes or so. So, Curtis?
That'd be good.
But they get a certification, and there's four different levels of certification depending on the amount of points that you get. So if you're like at a level one, you get about four practices in your office or lab, and get to level two or level four. The certification is good for a few years, so once you do it one time, and then we'll send you an email with a new checklist in 2 years. So you get your certification, you post it in a prominent place in your office and lab. And when they come in, people ask questions about what's that? But it also just serves as a way to say, you know, your office, your lab is committed to
sustainability.
Another one going.
Has anyone participated in the Green Office program in this group, or have any experience with that?
How many faculty, staff, stay with the, you know, self-report that they're taking the bus. And with the, how many capacity of parking permits are we selling? How many kilowatts are being used? So with stars, there's a lot of areas where we're counting up just hard numbers, and there's some areas to grow. And the areas I mentioned in my staff, where we can get more funding. The Green Office Green Life program, Aaron mentioned a leadership development program called the Green Ambassadors program. We're just beginning to roll that out. So there's a lot of points that we're not getting because there's a lot of staff at Cornell that don't yet have training on how to be sustainable in all these places. Either for the teaching route or for a leadership program, we do have a Sustainability Management Academy module. So if people are going through, some people here are familiar. Was it worth your 3 hours?
Yeah. Okay. I was wondering.
I'm really glad you didn't say that.
Sorry, quick question on that. How many colleges have college engagement plans?
So right now, or programs?
Programs,
right
now, yeah.
Right now, since we just started in 2013, the College of Engineering is in the College of Engagement program. And right now, we have two college teams. And we had different teams in the College of Engineering, and now in the College right now, they're focusing on doing their nautical certification. And then in November, they'll focus on energy and focus on, they're actually going to have a competition in their college called the Energy Smackdown, and we'll also be doing a competition in the Veterans Hall as well. And then in the spring, they'll be focusing on the Cyclomania. And then near graduation, when it starts to warm up again, they'll focus on community well-being. And these are things that they have chosen, their Green Ambassadors have chosen, their Green Ambassadors are excited about. And what will happen is that they'll choose to create access to focus on and figure out ways working with energy and sustainability to engage their community. And so what we've done is before we even initiated this program, we actually did research on the college. We actually did community research. Mm-hmm. And we figured out what people were interested in, what were some of the barriers to really engaging with sustainability. And so we used that information to help build the things that they focus on and to also make sure that we decrease the barriers for engagement. Mm-hmm.
And are you able in your group and to handle more than one college at a time? Or is it sort of, we need to wait till one's done to take on another?
It's actually good for us to start doing the research now because the research is a very much key component. I am so I'm going to say, I don't think it's too much to start having those conversations and doing the research now. And we have partnerships with other people across campus. We work directly with diversity and inclusion. Linda is also a very key partner that we will be working with to develop some metrics around engagement.
Great.
So she'll be helping us with the surveys and getting some feedback from the college before we start.
One thing to add to that is part of it, it does come down to the bandwidth and capacity. And CALS right now is looking at actually creating a position that would be an internal CALS position to advance these kinds of engagement and other kinds of college-specific initiatives. So if colleges were actually putting in that level of commitment into it, we would be able to expand much quicker. And the examples that Aaron, the human ecology and college engineering, we were basically kind of hand-holding them into it and having to basically be the staff support people behind it. And we were kind of helping bring their teams together. But even at this point, they're just doing it, kind of on the, giving off a little bit of time with a few people. And I think really institutionally, we would need to have some distributed sustainability liaisons in all the colleges to be able to maintain a level of, we can actually coordinate a lot of it, but you would need that extra layer of support. In the way that we have diversity professionals all across the university, we have a lot of those functions distributed. So I think CALS may be one of the first, but that's not even the right team. This is a new approach to the university.
Great.
So just to give you real quick with the checklist, there's different types of actions, and they all fall under these different areas, these focus areas. So there's actually well-being, energy, purchasing, transportation, travel, as well as WIPs. And there's a lot of different actions that an office can choose from or look at, and the purpose of including all of these different actions is to show you, one, what you are currently doing, and to give you an idea of some of the other actions that you could adopt under a specific area. So the way that we have it listed on the checklist is that, one, the actions that are worth 1 point are easy things that don't take some extra effort to really adopt in the office. And some of the level 4 things may require a little bit more engagement and support from other people in your office to do. And the same thing goes in like all of the other areas as well. In order to help you all or help people actually commit to these actions, we have the resource plans that we've created for these different areas. So if you go up here, there's different office guides that are available to help. Different guides that are available. Especially when it involves purchasing and transportation, we give recommendations on some of the products that are available in eShop to help you achieve the point. We have preferred vendors for different goals, as well as some tax planning as well. And then the preferred computers that are more energy efficient, as well as some alternatives to space heaters. How many people have space heaters in their office? And we have these things, as well as things called toe-to-toe. It is a heated foot pad. I always put my feet on it, actually sit on mine, and it's great. It's
exchange, and our secretary couldn't get that to work.
The exchange?
Yeah, where you exchange a heater for the toe-to-toe. Either it wasn't there, or she tried all last year and couldn't get to that.
Well, actually, I was in charge of that. We don't do it anymore.
Oh.
And we went through everybody on the list. But if you're still interested, we do have we'll talk.
I'm talking to you about that, Aaron.
Okay. We can talk about it. We just keep changing. But it depends on how many that you would need. We also have this thing called EcoStrip that basically is the USB cord connected to a power strip, and it senses when your computer is off or hibernating, and it'll shut off everything else that's connected to your desk. So like your speakers, if you have a printer, your charger, if your computer's off, it won't draw power from those other appliances. So
that's very cool.
Those are some alternatives that we have available, and that are also available in eShop as well. there's different guides that are available for different areas of disabilities or different areas of the brain altogether. And this is one of our more important courses. It's one you have a really advanced planning guide. We provide a list of different caterers that have consulting. We give recommendations on how you can make your event more sustainable. And so we definitely promote this on our campus, and we have consulting here.
If I can, Eric, is there any way that maybe the communications committee can get together with Aaron and maybe try on a regular basis to include some sort of helpful hints or topic or something in the newsletter, sort of like a green corner or a sustainability section, whatever sort of makes sense? Because I think a lot of these resources are great, and if we have the reach that we do with our EA communications to the entire staff population, it might be a great way to, you know, just one thing at a time, you know, give folks something to sort of focus on. So I don't know if that's something in the communications committee you guys could work together on, and you can even get your 10 tips done in advance, and then it's just sort of, you know, plug and go as time goes on. Eric. Gina?
Part of the discussion, the question came, I think you think really, you know, how much of a significant change will composting make into the number that you were showing earlier in the show? And the response made so much sense to me. It was probably not much, but it's changing the culture that we have here. So each of the little things that we do individually or that we do in an office changes how we will do things more broadly in the future. So that makes sense to me, that it isn't just a drop in the bucket, it's how we make the change.
Curtis?
Just real quickly, what involvement do you have with Geneva in the communication?
So right now we're focused on the right now. We haven't been doing anything. They did participate in a competition that Cal had, I believe, about 3 years ago, and they had some of their own energy conservation initiatives that are going on, so there are different initiatives to make the campuses, the buildings more energy efficient. And then Cornell Tech, the first academic building is supposed to be flattened for the side of the real net zero energy building, but until people actually get into the building,
so we are coming close to the end of our time, and I hate to be the timekeeper, but we have to, because I don't want to run out of time for the rest of the agenda items. I didn't know, Chris, if there was something maybe you wanted to touch on briefly about the staff skills for success.
Thank you. Hopefully people have seen those. If not, we have lots of posters. So you know, you saw the old posters, the posters. We have a lot of better posters now. We've still got probably several hundred of them in our office that are ready for people to pick up all the places we can think of, and we only have a few select places, so if you want those, give me a call, shoot me an email, we've got plenty of those. And I would go back to what Gene was saying, that the technology is really necessary to achieve the goals, but the behavior change is going to be really key. The behavior change comes because of making changes. So that every drop just keeps expanding.
Well, great. We appreciate all of the work that you do on behalf of the entire university. I think it's incredible that we've made the commitments we've made so far. And I think we're excited at the EA level to start partnering and changing behaviors and changing the way we think about things. And, you know, those small things will add up over time. So we've gotten some of the big stuff out of the way, but probably the hard work is just beginning. So as we continue the dialogue, and if there's folks who have interest in some of these topics that came up, would love to see some either resolutions of support or calling for action, ways that we can further advance the message, you know, anything that you all say, hey, this would be great for the EA to just sort of give a little extra push from a legislative perspective or engagement perspective, please fire those off and use us as the resource that we are. And we're excited to continue the conversation and hope this be the first of many.
Yeah. We'd love to see the EA all be registered yeah. Green Office
Service.
Great. Thanks so much. All right, so we'll move right into the next bit on the agenda. We have old business, and hopefully we can shorten the time for this. It's the welcome and invitation of incoming President Elizabeth Garrett. There was a typo that was pointed out, which has since been corrected. A misspelling of President Garrett's last name on the last be it finally resolved clause. This was feedback from Linda and Curtis and some others to try to beef up and express a strong sentiment and support for the qualities that President Garrett brings to the table and the excitement that we have around her background and her coming to Cornell and the diligence that the Board of Trustees put to the process to essentially bring us such a qualified and exciting candidate. So, Curtis?
Do we have quorum?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 13. We have quorum.
Sorry, motion to close discussion.
There's a motion to close discussion. Is there any debate? Or is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? All right, seeing no dissent, I will close debate. Is there a motion to approve? Or is there we closed discussion, so now you vote.
Yes.
Oh, yes. All right, so all those in favor? All those opposed? All right, so this carries 13 to 0. Anyone abstaining? All right, 13... Sorry, 14. I'm going to vote because I think she's great. So, all right. Well, that's good. Great. We've got two down, which is 100% more than last year. Actually, no, I think we're on par with last year. Just kidding. We got two more to go. And then so we'll move on. I think we can sort of skip talking points for David and Mary's visit and sort of an open discussion. But I would ask you all, please email myself and BJ so we can start to build the communications to the president's office, because I know they like to have some time to sort of sort things out and make sure there's no... they want to have answers to questions that we have while they're here. So I think if everybody can shoot one question or one thought or whatever it is, then we have 19 questions that we can sort of sort through and frame the discussion around. So please do that over the course of the next 4 or 5 days. If you run back to your office and think of a question and fire it off, then you're done and you don't have to remember it. So please send those along or drop a note in the box and we can go about it that way too. Whatever is convenient, send the note along. That would be awesome. Ulysses says, I don't know if everybody knows Ulysses. If you don't, you should, is essentially what that just meant. But I'll let you introduce yourself.
Sure.
Yeah, jump right in.
Well, BJ actually... I'm not totally familiar with this topic, but as you might have guessed from the
The guy who was in Berea before he had started in alumni affairs, cousins were both mentioned advisors who were on the same meeting, so the same paper. The road he started in April, full time, but since I actually graduated from here. So I've been there, and I was there until a week ago, then came back finally. And I've since moved on to the general school that I work for Ty and Ray, the office for the future now. One thing that I found, which some of you may know if you're not looking for HR, that temporary employees actually are not counted as internal applicants when you're actually like, so if, when you're applying for Cornell, when you're applying for the assessment of the relationship, when you go to the HR website, there are essentially like two main things that you pick as an internal applicant or an external applicant, and they tell you in the internal applicant, the description of the temporary employees in that account, you're not allowed to do that. Which to me seems a little odd, because essentially you could be a temporary employee here for about a year.
Oh, it's fine.
You know, your appointment. Get to know, get to learn the work culture very well, meet a lot of people, and still you are not put in kind of that primary pool or in a lot of the primary search pool that is when it comes to applying for a lot of jobs. Unless you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And to me, that seems a bit unfair. Of course, I'm relatively new to the real world, so it might be normal for all I know. But something to think about, the EA wants to maybe pick up the matter and consider having politicians. I'm not sure if there is just a specific policy. I'm not sure if that means.
It's a compliance issue.
Right. I'm sure if you change this, it means that you have to grant.
Yeah, it's a federal compliance issue.
So it
why can you explain?
Sorry,
it?
Yeah.
Because it's so in terms of our affirmative action plan, who's included our affirmative action plan of regular employees, that's something for the most part, and we're supposed to be tracking people's movement. And so we need to understand when there's a job search, you know, if it's an internal, you know, from that standpoint, that so I can tell you from a recruiting standpoint, they typically don't even look at that designation there when they're looking at pools. They look at the pool. We use it more from behind the scenes for data tracking purposes to see, you know, what percentage, like the information we presented last year too when we're looking at percentage of internals versus external hires. That's what we use it more for. They're not supposed to really be using that for recruitment purposes to determine, but I don't know, but that's. Okay.
Do you know how you determine if a job is both internal versus internal and external?
I know that they're two different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you sign in, you'll see one-on-one site and not
right.
On
that.
You're supposed to.
Because aren't they supposed to post it internally for a period and then it opens up to external?
Yeah.
Is that for every posting?
Or sometimes they're both posted.
Yeah, it depends. It really depends on the posting.
But do you know what that determination?
It really depends on the area. I mean, we're so big in things that are definitely all over the place. But sometimes, and there have been cases. So, for example, in the trade, we had several people who had been for electricians who had worked for Cornell for 5 and 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had positions open up, and we got special permission to, in that case, because to consider that part of our internal pool because at that point we were on hiring freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So we do look at things like that. It's really important, and that was only posted internally because we thought it was there when they had been working for 5, 10 years that was that they'd come through the union. So it is looked at as an individual case basis, but it really is not supposed to be used per se as determination. What we do say is if you have an internal in your pool, it's a courtesy of have more communication with that person because they're a current employee, particularly if they don't qualify for position or they get up to you know, interview and they don't get a position, you say it's a courtesy, not anyone does it. So we have to internal to explain to them a little bit more. So that's the only way it's really supposed to be being used. I don't know if it's being used any other way, but I can tell you from a compliance standpoint, we need to check it and track it to report to the government. In terms of our movement. So I hope, you know, I can certainly ask more questions to make sure people are using it to, you know, because a lot of people, a lot of tents are putting in for a body because of self-identification. We do have a lot of tents that were, and I was told that by the staff meeting, because I was like, well, you know, so the data, we have to kind of clean it a little bit when we can do that. So a lot of these tents are putting in for because they've worked there.
I was just going to say, what I just noticed that's interesting is that this is the only institution that I've been at where internal jobs are private. So like a lot of jobs that I've been looking, like even at Columbia, you see the both internal, it says internal candidate, but you can still see that posted, but ours is covered protected, so that means only members inside of the community can see that. And I just wonder, what does that mean for our initiatives in terms of recruiting talented individuals and things like that, if we have certain positions that are not even seen on the outside, so that special consideration might not even be able to occur because people are not getting the access, even though that position even exists. So I just wonder, can they create that kind of barrier, like unintentionally, even though you need to attract, can we at least maybe be shown? But I just know there's positions like they're really, really different in the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I think that has been a challenge is that they have an extremely strong internal candidate that is probably 95% going to get the job, right? And then you hear people say, well, then why are they even like,
why do you have to post it for a week?
I put myself out there, my supervisor might hear about it, and they're supposed to get the job because they have such a strong internal candidate. This is a test who's worked for them for many years that they really want to get the job becomes available. So I think in cases like that where they may have a very strong one or two internal, maybe more than one internal, if they do it that way, then, you know, because they know one of the two or so is going to get the job. In those cases, what we try to encourage is that all positions be filled. That's the way we try to encourage it. And I think the government would prefer us to encourage that, to understand that we also have to keep career development very much in mind for our employees.
So the thing that I think I find interesting with you at this point is the perception, right? Because hearing you explain it kind of makes sense, right? On a quick and dirty sort of explanation. But I think that we have folks that are out there who aren't engaged at that level, who don't understand it, who say, okay, I've committed myself for 6 months to a year as a temporary employee, and it's like I don't even work here. It's like I'm not even a part of it. So I think that's really the issue, and if there's a way to better articulate that rather than saying like temps don't count, that maybe would have stopped the conversation if it was put as, you know, we value our temporary employees and based on reporting needs or something like that, to sort of, I don't know, maybe set a different tone.
I think that's really great feedback, and I can talk because I know that there's certain definition things we can program into Leo. I'm not sure where that flexibility is, but I can. And you're talking about the players, so I can go into apply. I can talk with the rec unit as personal policy, and see if there's some flexibility, and maybe I can. And if they say yes, maybe I can run the language by you to see if it feels better. It is more. I'm happy to take that on. I would never actually heard that from someone, and I think, you know, hearing what that reaction is, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that if somebody who put a lot of time into the university feels like, I'm so young.
But I mean, but that's right. Even, it's put on the ID card. Your ID card for Cornell should say 10th as well.
I know it makes sense, but it is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So not only is that, it is put on the ID card, it is, I was the temp when the survey came out. I couldn't fill out the survey. Wasn't even allowed to fill it in. So, I mean, I do think that there is a little bit more there that does affect some of these employees.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's a balance with temporary, because you get some temporary employees that are actually temporary.
Right.
Right, and then you get some that are
Perm attempts,
which we shouldn't technically have for too long,
right?
Because a temporary is what, 6 months to a year, no more than a year, really, usually, before they have to take a hiatus and come back. So I think that there's some, because do you want the temp that's here 2 weeks to fill out a survey,
right?
is, you know, I think there's some discussion that needs to be happen there, but I think in terms of how we make them feel as a part of our community, that's really probably where the discussion should lie. So you're willing to...
I'm willing to follow up on this one in particular.
Okay.
But I'll take that thinking too more into some of the things that we're doing.
Yeah. So if there is maybe a result of a suggestion of a language change, if that's something we want to put in a resolution format and communicate through the appropriate channels, but I know there were two hands and I don't want to cut anybody off, but we do have about a minute and a half left.
I know in building care, there are staff members that have been temps for 5, 6, 7 years.
You know? Even in administration, I've met others. I've gone to program training courses and some of them have been temps for years. So not even straddling, let's say, the maintenance center, but actual administration program managers. So,
sure.
I mean, you know.
Oh, I don't know if this book has a resolution, but I'd like to learn more about this, and I think this is something that should go to the personnel policy committee to review and come back. So I think that's my suggestion, and I don't know who chairs that. I mean, because I'm really curious to learn, like, how many temp staff do we have? What's the demographic? Because, I mean, if we're talking about diversity and this has a negative impact, I'm like, hey, this is why it's not getting people of color, or if we're looking at women in higher roles and things like that, like, how does this temporary staff and population create to the overall community? And then you have people 6 or 7 years and they're still considered temporary. Why is that? Is this budgetary?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, sometimes you can go through the fact that, and I was, okay, you've got this project, so for that project, you've been dealing with it for 6 months. So now we're going to give you another one. You did such a great job with that one. So again, we start the clock again, and now you've got another project. So the, utilizing someone for a couple of weeks or, you know, the summer, but when we're using good staff or quality staff or diversity, you know, staff for these mini sort of appointments, then it's a different
Well, I think there's several reasons why it's a management decision would come to create a temporary position and maybe continue on, which I think is a separate issue.
Yeah.
But I would ask if you could look into that. That would be great. And I think what we did with when we looked at internal hiring, there was a certain sentiment around the table, but the data, once it was distilled down, showed us that maybe our perceived opinion was not correct. So let's first seek to understand. Let's then maybe draw some resolution or action items from that and move from there. So we appreciate your efforts.
Yeah. And I can tell you there's a large number of attempts that don't tend to turn. In fact, they use cancer away as a starting out.
Working interview.
Yeah. So there's a large number of attempts that don't tend to turn. And I can probably find out.
You know, winter break, we have, what, 7, 8, 9 days, whatever it is, with pay. You know, and I have a staff team employee that has 5 children, and he's going to be without any work for that time period. You know, it just destroys me.
Are there any other items? It looks like we've run out of time. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second? All right.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.